Welcome to the Habits of Leadership podcast, brought to you by Cut Through Coaching, helping leaders and their teams to thrive, professionally and personally.
Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Habits of Leadership podcast. My name is Dan Hasler, and joining me today for a Q&A episode is my friend and colleague, Mr. Tim Perkins. How are you, Perko?
I am outstanding, Mr. Hasler.
Outstanding, yep. Are we? Yep. Big weekend planned.
Yeah. Bit of time sitting by the box watching a lot of footy this weekend.
Okay. Because as we are recording this, it is Friday the 23rd of September, 12:30 p.m. And what I'm asking...
You can almost smell the liniment at this time of the year, September.
You can hear the roars of the crowd. But what I'm asking you, as we record this, Perko, is I know for a fact you'll be watching the Bledisloe Cup. I know you'll be watching the NRL prelims. And I know you'll be watching the AFL Grand Final. Perko, Nostradamus, the Oracle... Give us your tips.
You are such a horrible friend and colleague. You are totally setting me up here.
I'm just looking to make some cash, mate.
Looking to make some cash. All right. Well, if we're going to make this interesting, if you're going to force me into giving you my tips, I think we need to bet.
Okay.
I think we need to bet.
And what is the wager?
Well, what we might do is ask our listeners to call in and give us the stakes. Let us know what you think I should be gambling with here against Hasler. But I think pride is on the line more than anything else.
Bearing in mind, but when this is published, I think the vast majority of the results will have been determined once this goes live. Anyway.
In which case, I'll look like an idiot.
No, you'll look like a genius.
Or a genius. Yeah.
What do you got for me? Let's start with...
I don't even know what's on. Tell me what's on and
I'll
tell you.
The prelim tonight, Cowboys versus Eels.
Cowboys. Well, Chad Townsend may well be listening to this because he is one of our listeners, we know. And Chad, I wish you all the best. But I'm really sorry to tell you that those Eels are coming up north into the hot, sweaty environment of Townsville, and they're going to clean up the Cowboys.
Okay, so you're not from one, I'm guessing, at this point.
We've lost a listener as well.
All right, let's switch to Saturday, and we're going to switch codes, and we're going to go AFL. Swans versus, I believe, I don't really follow
Geelong.
The
Cats.
Yeah. My only knowledge of AFL and the Cats would be Patrick Dangerfield. And I've got a big rap on him. I've heard him present a couple of times, and I know he's about some interesting things. But all of that is irrelevant, Perko, because what I want to know is who's bringing home the bacon.
Paddy Dangerfield is an interesting one. We sat next to each other, I think you and I, down in Victoria at a Positive Schools conference, and we heard Paddy Dangerfield, and we were very impressed by him.
Yep.
And he put up a particular slide at one stage where he said, I lost the love of the game.
The joy of football changed when
the pressure was too high. And I think, despite the fact that I think that they're absolute favourites to win, I think he's going to get the yips.
You think Buddy and the Boys?
Buddy and the Boys.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if we've got any Swans in our listening audience.
I have no idea.
But I'm going with you, Swannies.
Okay,
This week's an underdogs weekend.
Okay,
naught
from two. Okay, so let's head across the Dutch. And it's the Bledisloe, Eden Park, Wallabies versus New Zealand off the back of a very controversial conclusion last week. Who have you got? The Boys in Black or the Gentlemen in Gold?
Well, I think it'll be very hard to clean up the All Blacks at Eden Park tomorrow.
Okay, so New Zealand are your winners?
Oh, you haven't said none from three here,
Dan. I think you could well be on the money there, but we'll see. Back to the NRL. Panthers, Rabbits.
Well. New Prime Minister Albo, Rabbits fan.
A rabid fan.
A rabid Rabbits fan. Penrith... I like a team that hasn't had as much success as another team to get up.
Okay.
So I'm going for the Rabbits
over
the Chocolate Soldiers. Okay. And again, it's an unlikely win. Mm. But I think Cody Walker is going to do something amazing with Latrell Mitchell.
Yep.
And the Rabbits may clean up the Panthers, which will lead us to a Souths versus Eels grand final the following week, which Souths are going to win.
Okay, well, there you go.
Real Nostradamus stuff now.
That's really, really, really crystal balling it. So I'm going to put it out there. Never have the following words been more pertinent than right now? Bet with your head, not over it. Gamble responsibly.
Don't gamble at all. Just make your own silly guesses at this like I've done. And for all of our listeners who have no interest in football of any kind whatsoever, welcome to this month's episode, this week's episode, where we're listening to your questions. We're responding to your questions.
We are. We are indeed. We are indeed. We've got a few. We've got one voicemail message as well. They rang in to Cut Through HQ, and for doing so, they will receive, Perko, a signed copy of The Act of Leadership. But we'll get to that question later. I'm going to throw a question to you straight away, Perko, without notice. This question comes in from Adrian. And he asks, with so much talk around quiet quitting, especially post-COVID, how can leaders navigate this and improve culture in the workplace whilst also taking care of their own well-being? Perko, what do you got for us?
Well, we couldn't really, thanks, Adrian, for the question. And it's an interesting question, a few elements to it there around quiet quitting, you know, in the COVID environment. But also improving culture in the workplace and then taking care of our own well-being. Improving culture in a workplace is something that we should all be aspiring to do with it, whichever lever we can pull, whichever role we have in the particular workplace. But I want to go to the end of the question first, taking care of our people's well-being or taking care of our own well-being, which is such an important element for all of us. And if we go back a couple of episodes, the interview that I did with Sophie Scott, where she talks about a number of ways and the importance of looking after our own well-being, and that's where we need to start. We absolutely need to start before we consider, you know, the well-being of the other people that we work with. How do we look after ourselves so that when we turn up, in whichever way we're turning up, how do we turn up with our metaphorical gas tank as full as it can be, so that we can behave and interact in a way that is actually going to elevate not just ourselves but the people around us as well? And I suppose in relation to the quiet quitting, which really is a phenomenon internationally, where people have perhaps, I don't know, Dan, how would we describe it, lost interest in what they've been doing or lost some purpose with what they're doing. And
maybe, I think maybe they've just got better clarity on what life might be about. Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
Which, you know, feels like an indulgence for some people because, you know, the reality of it is that the majority of people can't just quit their job because they've got so many other expectations and responsibilities. But when we talk about quiet quitting, I mean, exploring why people want to quit. You know, as you're suggesting there, Dan, people have had that, they've taken the opportunity, maybe the opportunity's been shown to us through everything that's impacted us during COVID, to think about what's important to us and to really explore with our people what it is that's important to them and how that's shifted as a result of COVID and how we can respond to what's shifted for people so that we can really bring them in a way that we can respond to what's important to them. And what needs of theirs are perhaps not being met in this new scenario that we find ourselves in now. If we've said that we had experience X prior to COVID and now we've got experience Y, how do we look at what's important to our people? How can we be really genuine about that and adapt to what's important for our people as leaders? Or if we're not a leader in our environment, how do we really understand ourselves better? And then how do we articulate, and we're going to come to this with another question later on about really speaking up, but how do we articulate what's changed for us and what needs to change for us in that workplace so that we can be truly satisfied and we can bring everything that we can to it rather than a sense of overwhelm and burnout, as Sophie Scott refers to in that other podcast. But so that our desire is not to quit. Perhaps our desire is to quit what used to be.
The old way of doing things.
Without having to quit our actual job and say, okay, well, I'm pulling up stumps on what used to, the old norms, and now this is what's important to me now. How do we create an environment where I can work in a situation where those needs really are being met?
I think the most forward-thinking or enlightened leaders are kind of doing these two things together. They're looking after their own well-being, not in any selfish sense, but in a real, coming from a perspective of real self-care. Mm. And they're doing it, I don't want to say publicly, but they're quite transparent in what they're doing. They're very clear that they're walking the walk, and they're articulating to their people that, you know, this is okay, this is important, that we can all do this. And so they're kind of walking the walk, they're setting the scene, so to speak. But then, and this is a, you know, that next level down, is they're then, rather than just saying, hey, just do what I'm doing, but they're really genuine in going to their people and asking them with real curiosity, real authenticity, okay, what does well-being mean to you? And how can we create an environment here that not only does, you know, the work get done, whatever that means, but, you know, not only are we doing our work, but we're doing it in a way which is nourishing for you. We're doing it in a way which, you know, taps into whatever is important for the human experience: autonomy, mastery, purpose, belonging, psychological safety, that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, we've used, or I've used this phrase a lot, you know, this idea of temporal milestones, moments in time where it makes sense to do this. And as I said, I think the most enlightened leaders have recognized that the past few months particularly have presented us with a temporal milestone, an obvious moment in time where it makes sense to have these conversations and do so authentically. So I guess the short way of answering Adrian's question is, how can leaders navigate this and improve culture in the workplace? We don't know. We need to ask the people in that workplace and then really authentically sit with those considerations and do our best to create such an environment.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of saying it there, Dan. We don't know. Nobody really knows until you've spoken to your people, finding out what it is, what do they need, and how do we, and, you know, I like the use of the term authentically there, you know, really to authentically do it with our people, listen to them, rather than just come in with a fix-all that's going to, you know, we heard...
Not fix anything.
And yeah, perhaps exacerbate things because people feel disrespected because you've put a generic, you know, cover-all over something, you know. And we've heard people say on multiple occasions, you know, just introducing lunchtime yoga is not going to fix anything. For some people, that will absolutely make things better. Mm. But let's not pretend that one size fits all.
Yep.
Dan, we've got a question here from Keith. There are some interesting words in this one. Why do so many narcissistic sociopaths, you know,
have podcasts? That's not what Keith asked.
Let's go back to Keith. Why do so many narcissistic sociopaths manage to achieve leadership roles in proportion to self-reflective empaths?
I love this question. I saw this. I laughed out loud when it came through, but not in a laughing at the question, but kind of I can really see or feel where this question has come from. But the first thing I'd want to do, I think, before tackling the question is, I guess, just go to those two words, narcissistic and sociopath. I think often we might see behaviors which we think are those things, but we have to be mindful that, you know, both of those things are diagnoses, you know, and we're certainly not qualified to determine whether someone is clinically diagnosable as narcissistic or a sociopath. But what I think we could draw a line between is some of those behaviors, you know, the and I'm going to be quite general when I talk here, but you know the self-promotion, the confidence, the loudness, the kind of
the hubris,
the forging their own path, the climbing the promotional ladder, that kind of stuff. I can appreciate that for some people, viewing that and the way they feel as a result of perhaps being caught in the wake of such a person, absolutely, the feelings that they are narcissistic or sociopathic, I understand where that comes from. I'm not going to stick with those labels, but what I am going to suggest is that those behaviors, rightly or wrongly, tend to be rewarded in lots of organizations because perhaps their approaches to leadership in those organizations or institutions or departments, they're quite lazy. You know, they're quite lazy. They put they set up an environment where, you know, we look for people to nominate themselves. We are very performative in our selection process. You know, we demonstrate what you've done, present well at interview, you know, be really confident. And it kind of, in some ways, it's kind of creating the environment where, well, people who might be more predisposed to doing that, you know, if you think about some of the biases, you know, like if you've got Dunning-Kruger bias, where your attitude outweighs your aptitude, you know, that's a perfect environment for you. I'm just going to go gung-ho here. I'm just going to forge my own path, and I'm just going to make it to the top. I'll fake it till I make it. And let's be clear, some people don't even think they need to fake it. They're just unwittingly poor at what they're doing, their people skills or whatever. But for whatever reason, because of the systems that we have, because we don't spend a lot of time actually on the ground with people, seeing how their people skills actually are, we don't spend time with them reflecting on their own practice. And, you know, it's a much easier way to identify leaders by putting a call out for, here's the new promotion, who fancies it? And then being wowed by a, you know, flashy presentation or an overstated CV, versus, as Keith refers to, perhaps the more self-reflective empath. The more self-reflective empath might hold back on going for it because they know. They know there's a skills gap there. They know that, you know, I'm not quite cut out for this particular role, whereas at the other end of the spectrum, they've maybe not even thought about it. They've just gone for it. And as I said, I actually think this is more of an organizational challenge than it is an individual one. I think organizations, departments of education, for example, or big multinationals, whoever it might be, or even just your small business, right? I think we need to be far more deliberate and mindful about, okay, well, what are the values that we want our place and our people to stand for? And presumably, narcissism and sociopathy aren't there in your list of value statements.
I'd love to see that one on the wall.
Although there's a lot of theory that suggests a lot of big multinationals, you know, if they were a person, would be this. But let's suspend that for a moment, you know, and say, okay, well, how do we get better at identifying who we want to lead our people? Because it might be that we need to go to people who up until this point are really holding themselves back. And it might be that it's that level of reflection, that level of humility, which is what we really want in leaders. I remember someone throwing away a real throwaway line around, you know, like, the people who put their hand up for leadership positions are really not the people we need leading, you know, which I don't fully agree with, but I reckon that there's a lot of people who don't put their hand up for leadership positions who really should be leading. And I think we need to get better, and when I say we, I mean every organization on the planet, needs to get better at talent identification or potential for that, and then building a really robust and supportive, you know, all the words we use, you know, resilient, psychologically safe, engaging, authentic approach to bringing these people into the leadership space.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a really interesting point there about talent identification, and it's interesting if we come back to the absurd tips that I've just made for the weekend and the Geelong Cats, because I believe that one of the things that Patrick Dangerfield talked about that day where we heard him speak down in Victoria, he was talking about that Geelong, and I'm possibly going to get this wrong,
so help me out. The Geelong way.
The Geelong way, which was about, you know, choosing players on character. Obviously, they've got to have base level skills.
Yeah.
But beyond base level skills, they were choosing on character rather than necessarily
talent.
The highest level of talent.
Yeah.
And what they were trying to do is build a culture. And it's very easy to get all the superstars with all the ego and the self-obsession and whatever, but is that what's going to make a team? And, you know, it's interesting to think about the self-reflective empaths as well, because we talk about confidence when we talk about those narcissistic sociopaths, and whether it's just a pumped-up, unrealistic sense of confidence. But self-reflective empaths can be very confident people. Whether or not they promote themselves in the same way. You know, when we talk about narcissism, it's self-obsession. And when we talk about sociopaths, it's a lack of awareness, a lack of emotional intelligence, a lack of empathy. How do we identify the talent of those people who we actually want to lead us? And I think we could probably do it without too much difficulty at all. It's about, do we actually want to identify that sort of talent, or are we only looking for the people who really aren't the right leaders for us? Are we ever getting the right leaders? How do we find the right leaders? What sort of metrics can we start to choose to say, okay, you know, prior to doing these interviews, how do we find out someone who is high empathy? How do we find out, you know, someone who is self-reflective? What sort of questions can we ask in order for that sort of talent to rise to the surface? And then are we prepared to take a bit of a gamble on someone who might be a bit quieter, someone who might lead from beside rather than being this bombastic out the front leader full of their own self-importance, which is going to cause us more dramas down the line?
I think it's time for a voicemail. In the newsletter and on my socials, I put the call out for questions and threw a bit of burly in the water to say that, you know, if you wanted to send us a voicemail message, because I just feel that it might be a more engaging experience to hear the voice of the people on the show. Then they would get themselves a signed copy of the book, which, to be honest, mate, I expect most people listening have already got a copy of the book. But this one, now it's signed, it's immediately halved in value because I've scrawled across it. So feel free, a signed copy, you can whack it on eBay, you can give it away. But our prize winner today, who sent us a voicemail, is Liam. And Perko, if you just push the button there on our machine, we'll have a listen right now.
Hi, Dan and Tim. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Just wondering what tips you had for new leaders trying to establish themselves in a new setting and building credibility and that sort of thing in their new context. Thank you.
So thanks for your message there, Liam. As I mentioned, a signed copy of the book is on its way to you. But as to your question, this question actually came up in our online Habits of Leadership Academy this week, where we had a member of the group who asked a very, very similar question to this. They were just about to embark on a new leadership position and were really torn, I guess, between going in there kind of gung-ho with all the ideas that, you know, he's been thinking about and what he wants to implement versus, you know, taking his time, listening, getting the lay of the land, not wanting to put people offside.
You know what this is making me think about, don't you, Dan?
You're going to have to. I've got it. You've got that knowing look in your eye. But yeah, help me out.
Well, you know, it appears that over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, almost everywhere I go working in the leadership game and everywhere you go, people are saying to us both, have you watched Ted Lasso?
Ah, yes.
How could Ted Lasso help us with this question, Mr. Hasler?
So I'm a recent arrival to Ted Lasso. It's taken me a while. The reason is I just didn't want another subscription service. Mm. But then all of a sudden, Apple TV offered a 3-month free subscription. I thought, bang, I'm in. Let's have a look at this Ted Lasso malarkey. And one of the things which is interesting in the Ted Lasso, so for those of you who don't know, he's an American coach of NFL. He gets plonked into an English football Premier League team and is charged with turning around its fortunes. And he comes at it with all manner of soft skill approaches, let's just put it that, because he knows nothing about football or soccer. So he's coming at it entirely with the people skills. And one of the things that he does very early on in his tenure is he sets up a suggestion box, which has a great story around it, but I don't want to spoil it, but the suggestion box, and basically asks the players to put any suggestions that they have for him as to how to improve the club, the football team. And the vast majority of suggestions are actually end up being personal attacks on Ted. But one of the suggestions is, it makes reference to the fact that the showers in the change rooms just don't have enough water pressure. They're just not good enough. They're just terrible. It's not a good experience. And so as they're going through the suggestions, he just passes it to assistant coach, says, oh, that's a good one, file that. And then very, very quickly, by the end of the episode, as it transpires, the players go into the change room and the showers have been fixed. And this is a beautiful example of one of the suggestions that we often offer to new leaders is to go, well, go in. The first thing you need to do is listen. You know, ask questions and listen with, again, using that word, real curiosity and authenticity to hear what the people have to say. Regardless of how good your ideas are, regardless of what you think needs to be done, there's a whole heap of stuff that's gone before you which you need to be respectful of and mindful of, and then being a, not acquiescing, not holding back necessarily, you know, or being drawn into old dramas, but being really deliberately steady in your approach, because you need credibility. You need, as Liam asked, you know, how do I gain credibility? Well, the best way to gain credibility is get a little win, get a small win. Find out what the equivalent of the water pressure is in the new setting and fix it. So a simple process is ask a question, listen, consider, and act if you can. And if you can't act, go back to them and explain why something can't be done. Because what it turns out is that most people are actually satisfied if they know you've at least considered it authentically. Mm. They don't necessarily need you to act on every suggestion they have, but what they do need is if you've asked a question, they want to know that you've seriously considered it. And you know, once you start building up those little wins, those small wins, those things which, you know, from the outsider, certainly, they're not the things you're going into this leadership position to change. Like Ted Lasso doesn't go in, he didn't go into it to change the showers, you know, but it's a stepping stone to building, you know, credibility, to building cohesion, building connection, so that when the new things do need to be brought in, you're doing it with them, not to them. And you're also, by building this cohesion and connection, you've been able to understand where they've been, where they've come from, so you can help them take the next step to where they need to go.
Because I think credibility there in your question, Liam, and thank you for it. Credibility for me is all about integrity, and integrity is essentially doing what you've said you're going to do. So if if we use the Ted Lasso example, he's asked for suggestions. Now, some could ask for suggestions and then completely ignore them. Credibility goes down, integrity goes down. Whereas, you know, actually wanting to act on the things that, you know, your people say matter to you, because I suppose the alternative is coming into a situation and really, you know, when we talk about mindset, we talk about the idea of proving, you know, in a fixed mindset versus improving in a growth mindset. You know, if your motivation is to improve as opposed to prove, you're far more likely to be all ears and really listening and thinking about what's important and how you can play a role in supporting that, which builds your own integrity with the people. And so if your motivation is to prove yourself, and perhaps because of a bit of imposter syndrome, which is completely normal going into a new leadership situation, if the idea is to prove yourself, you might go in with all sorts of things that won't work in that environment because they're just generic things that you're thinking will show how credible you are, will show how capable you are, will, you know, downplay any sense of imposter syndrome that you might have. But the more generic they are, the less suited to the context they are, the less responsive to the people they are. The Aussie fighter, boxer, Jeff Fenwick talked about the fact that, you know, I'm sure it wasn't his quote specifically, but you know, he's got two ears and one mouth, and he should listen in that sort of proportion as opposed to speaking.
That's Jeff Fenwick. I'm not believing for a second that he's the philosopher that came up with that.
I don't know how philosophical it actually is.
For now, it's Fenwick.
For now, it's the Marrickville Morlaix himself, Jeff Fenwick.
All right, sweet.
And if you want to hear something very funny, listen to Roy and HG talking about Jeff Fenwick prior to a fight. Daniel. Shall we go to the next question?
Yeah, let's go.
Are we going to go this whole question? Because this is a long one. Let's go with it.
Yep.
All right, so this is from Carrie. Carrie says that she is new to a leadership role. She's 12 months in. She said, I struggle with confronting the loud voices in my team. Perhaps this goes back to a little bit of Keith's question as well, the self-reflective empaths. Confronting the loud voices in my team. There are some very opinionated people who feel they can speak their mind. Admin, higher up, haven't pulled them up, but they are well aware. Admin are supportive, but they don't seem to stomp on poor, unprofessional behaviour. My nature is to avoid confrontation, so I struggle with addressing these people in these situations. Email is easy to address a problem, but it's more in the moment of face-to-face. I want advice on how to put people in their place while still being professional, respectful, and upholding their dignity. These are the type of people who want the last word, or don't see their faults, or that they are at fault. How do I gain the courage to speak up as a leader of a team?
Well, as you say, that's quite a long question, and we could probably have done the whole episode
on the various elements
on
of
the
it.
Various elements of that question. But what I'm going to try and do is take a stab at a few things which jump out at me. So rather than trying to answer, I guess, the question, you know, word for word, just a few of the things which jump out at me. And if I'm being honest, the first bit that jumps out at me is just some of the language in the question. And I appreciate that when you're in this kind of environment, it can get a little emotive, and it can get, you know, we feel that a lot of this is almost, you know, being done as an affront to us. It's an attack on us when somebody speaks up or, you know, is unprofessional, particularly in a team that we're leading. But one of the things that we try and work with leaders with, and this could be, you know, leaders in a corporate sense, it could be coaches of a sporting team or even teachers in a classroom actually, is being able to try and separate what's happening with then how it makes us feel and then our reaction to it. So when I hear words, for example, like, you know, I need to put someone in their place, or I need to stomp on poor behavior, or, you know, other examples of that is where, you know, like, I just need to be brutally honest with somebody, or, you know, I'm not here to make friends. Now, I'm not making a judgment on why people say that or why people feel that. But what I am saying is it's really hard to lead people effectively if that's the start point, if that's the mindset with which I'm coming to this situation with. So when we're working with people, and usually this is in a one-on-one situation, we'll spend a lot of time not acquiescing to poor behavior. That's not what it's about, but it's about recognizing that until we're ready to actually leave what, you know, we might refer to as the red brain at the door and really come at this with more neutral language and seeing this as a learning opportunity for us as much as anything. Because anyone can lead people who are, you know, at the top of their game and performing professionally and going above and beyond. Anyone can lead that. But the way you grow as a leader is when you come up against like this, you know, these points of friction and these challenges. If you are mindful enough to recognize, okay, well, this is an, you know, a euphemism I use a lot is, this is interesting. You know, this is some interesting behavior right here. What can I learn about myself here so that I can then, you know, lean into it? So things that Carrie's mentioned, you know, her nature is to avoid confrontation. So maybe I'll address it in an email. The problem with email is, as again, Carrie put in the question, is that's not in the moment. That tends to be after the fact. And so I think being able to sit with the discomfort that's what's happening here, but then choose to view this as a learning opportunity and choose to say, okay, well, what's my growth and development here as a leader in addressing this? So again, taking this at face value without knowing any of the characters involved, when I hear things like some people, you know, feel they can speak their mind, that's telling me that there are presumably some people who feel they can't, but they might want to. And so one way that we can gain the courage to speak up as a leader of the team is to understand what it is the team actually want, what it is the team actually need, and then advocate on their behalf. So one of the activities or processes that we often do with teams is to help them understand their norms. What is it? And this is often, if we go back to what we're talking about with the narcissistic sociopaths, go back to understanding what their values are. You know, who are we as a team? What do we stand for here? What are the values that we aspire to live into? And then as a result of that, what are the behaviors that need to be the norm in order for that to happen? And so you can frame it in any number of ways. And one way is just to simply, you know, talk about some of the things which, you know, are grinding your gears. you know, there's an episode of the podcast called How to Hold Your People Accountable with Jonathan Raymond, in which, you know, we suggest using that podcast itself as a stimulus for such an activity and say, okay, I don't think we're on the same page around a few things. Can we just talk about that right now? And by facilitating in a mindful and deliberate way, we're able to ask things like, and I'll just use a real simple one, you know, is it acceptable that people shout other people down in the meeting? And then being able to have that conversation, rather than just having people shout down people in meetings, actually, let's talk about how we do the work. Let's talk about the protocols that we want to see in our teams. And what you'll tend to find is that once you get a group of professional people sitting around talking about that, the people who often don't speak their mind, all of a sudden, that's probably a lie to say all of a sudden, but over time, they'll develop a confidence and a safety in being able to speak up about certain things, particularly if you as the leader offer a variety of forums to do that. It could be done anonymously through a survey, or it could be done completely the opposite, publicly in a meeting or forum. But by establishing what the norms are, for example, actually it is unacceptable to shout other people down in a meeting. And then, and this might sound a little bit didactic, but Tim and I would absolutely suggest you do this. Writing it down and having people literally sign that they agree to it, all of a sudden it becomes so much more easier. I'm not saying it's done and dusted, but it certainly becomes easier to hold people accountable to that, because all of a sudden you're not feeling the need to do it yourself. The whole team signed to this, and the whole team have a role to play in holding each other to account.
Yeah, because I think as soon as you start making assumptions that certain behaviours won't occur because that's not the way professional people behave, those assumptions end up biting us, because we can't make those assumptions. We have to really create them very deliberately and, as you say, write them down. It's interesting, you mentioned the Jonathan Raymond Accountability Dial podcast that you did with him, Dan, which was episode 38 for those people who want to have a look at it. A few other podcasts here have sort of come to me when looking at this question, and the first one was episode 50, which is the one with Ed and Peter Shine around humble leadership and what does it actually mean to be a humble leader. And it's not that, don't confuse humility with being ineffectual, because that's absolutely incorrect. You know, you can be a very humble leader who is very effective in the particular role, and it is all about, you know, getting to know your people and really understanding them. There's an element of your question here at the very end there, Carrie, where you talk about how do I gain the courage to speak up as the leader of a team. Well, I actually think that it's our professional responsibility to gain that courage. And so finding ways, and one of the things that came to me when I heard your question there, Carrie, is this idea of speaking truth to power, which is something that a lot of us struggle with, and it might be considered that the power is with you because you're the leader or you're a leader in the group. But we often know that the power sits with people who really demonstrate that power, and often used in a way that is, you know, problematic. They're not necessarily leaders, but we know that they're powerful people in the way that they carry themselves. And, you know, there's a couple of other episodes that may be useful. I don't want to overwhelm with, you know, references to past episodes. But the two others that come to mind are the interview that we did with Kim Scott around this concept of radical candor, which was episode 45. And then the other one, you know, episode 20, which is the interview that you did, Dan, with Amy Edmondson around creating psychological safety in a workplace. And those two in combination, those two podcast episodes in combination with each other, really help us understand what does it mean to be a leader? What's our responsibility as far as creating a psychologically safe environment where people can speak up and, you know, speak truth to power and hold ourselves up in a way where we have to really consider what it is that we're doing. And then the radical candor. How do we increase the care factor and challenge directly and have the conversations that we need to have, particularly to challenge inappropriate behaviours in the workplace, but also to really build that sense of empathy for the people that we have, because, you know, as you'll see when you look at and listen to that podcast and think about that radical kind of framework, it's really predicated on caring personally in order to challenge directly.
Yeah, I love what you've done there, Perko. You've packaged up a few different episodes, which we're actually going to be really deliberate about doing that for 2023, actually packaging up episodes and putting them out as, like, you know, free learning packages on our new online space. But being able to think about, you know, rather than these all being isolated episodes, you know, ideas as islands, there's a lot of synergy between, I'd say, virtually every episode. There's connections that you could draw between all of them. So thanks for doing that, because what I'll do is I'll make sure that all those links are in the show notes to each of them, so they don't need to go foraging through. They can just look at the show notes here. I'm going to throw our last question of the day, Perko, to you, my friend. And this is from somebody called Chris, who, this is another one where I kind of laughed when I read it, because, oh my word, do I get, I'm often on the receiving end of something like this. So he says, why is it that when staff make suggestions to leadership about ways in which they can improve or things that need to happen differently in the workplace, why is it that that always then results in more work for us? More work, more professional learning for the staff that actually made the suggestion in how leaders needed to change. Why does it always come back and land on our lap as more work?
It's a phrase or a sort of an idea that you use quite a bit, Dan. You know, it's an us thing. It's not a them thing. This idea that we, the us, need to explore this. You know, if someone's had the courage to speak up to a leader and give them some feedback about things that could actually be better, you know, the irony, as in Chris's question here, is that it comes back and becomes professional development for the staff to start to explore the things that they absolutely need to do. You need to do this. You need to lift up your, you know, socks around this particular thing, rather than recognising it as us. Dan, I'm going to throw back to you on this question, because I know you've got thoughts.
Yeah, so it's, you know, and there's no more detail in the question than that, but I'm going to use an example that I often hear a lot, is where members of staff will, you know, share back. And it's, I guess there's some irony here, because we've asked in a previous response to a question on this episode, we were talking about go and ask your people what they want around well-being, you know. And often that the people will speak up around the need to improve workplace culture or, you know, other aspects around well-being, and leaders hear that and go, oh, okay, they need to be more resilient. Let's get some trainers in and help them become more resilient. They need to change their mindset. They need to turn up more motivated, you know, because that's what they've told us. And it's like this real missed moment in time. And the reason that I laughed is because so often, and I do mean really, really often, people will call us and say, hey, I've got a group of people who I want you to work with. You know, you need to work on. Yeah. you know, they need to do this. They need to do that. And my response almost always is, yeah, I'm sure they do, but how about you? You know, I'm sure they do need to work on this, and I'm sure they do need to reflect on that, but to what extent do you need to as well? And more often than not, the only way we'll accept any kind of engagement in that manner is you're doing this with us. You know, like we have to have whoever's doing the booking, whoever's, you know, fixing a problem for other people by getting us in, they need to be in on it as well. Not just from a tokenistic point of view, but actually more often than not, it's not an us and them thing. It's an us thing. It's a we thing that we need to be figuring this out together. And as people who work with us would know, that's our core business. We get people in the mush, as we like to refer to it as, and we talk, we get things out there, and we help them understand that very, very rarely are people doing things malevolently. Very, very rarely are people in isolation doing those things. More often than not, it's a collective of people working on a whole heap of assumptions that they've got in their head, and we've all got these blind spots, and we're just doing the best we can without really understanding the collateral damage that we're leaving in our wake. And I think for any leader listening, if you're sitting there thinking, oh, yeah, you know, I need my people to learn this. I need my people to see this or do this, whatever that might be, whatever new shiny thing has got your attention or whatever book you've just read, my answer is, yeah, I'm sure they do. But I reckon you might need to sit with it a bit longer as well. And that's not being flippant, and that's not trying to be a smart ass, but it's just saying that you have to be able to be willing to do this side by side together with your people rather than trying to bring it in and giving them more work to fix what inevitably is going to end up getting worse because of your approach.
I think that's a very nice way to round out this episode, Daniel.
Indeed it is. It'll be even better once your tips come home, baby.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm guessing you're betting in the opposite direction to everything that I've suggested, except maybe the All Blacks.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really a gambler. I'm not really a gambler. I'm leaning. Oh, okay. I'm leaning. My leanings would be, for those who might be interested.
Just ignore the virtue signaling there for a minute from my co-host here.
My leanings are Cowboys in the heat. I've got no reference point with the AFL. I've got no idea, but I'm just going to go with Swans.
Neither do I. Yeah. It didn't stop me having a go.
I'm going to go Swannies.
Yeah.
Just purely because we're from Sydney. I'm going to go Penrith. And as it pains me to say it, I'd like to see the Wallabies get up, but Eden Park. You know what?
Go the Wallabies.
What the hell? What the hell?
What do you got to lose?
Go the Wallabies.
Stakes alone.
All right, we're going Wallabies. That's it. All right. So we'll see how that transpires.
Because people do listen to this podcast for our sporting tips.
Let me tell you, they have jotted down every pearl of wisdom.
Can I strongly suggest that anyone who's listened to what I've said do not put a single dollar on any of my suggestions.
But what I do suggest they do.
Let me talk to you about Bitcoin, though.
Let me tell you what I do suggest you do. I suggest that you like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. And I also suggest you share this as far and as wide as you can in your networks. Reason? Well, if you find it interesting, there's a fair chance that someone you know would find it interesting as well. And just by liking or just by commenting and certainly by subscribing, that does some kind of internet magic thing, which means that it puts it out to even more people, which helps us spread the word. It's a little thing for you to do, but it makes a real big difference here. And if you would like to leave us a question for an upcoming Q&A episode, then you can head over to habitsofleadership.com, click on the podcast page there, and you could submit it either by email or, like Liam, and get yourself a signed copy of my book, leave a voicemail for us. But until our next episode, thanks for joining us, Perko.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Until our next episode, take care. Take it easy.